Ever wonder why 95% of leads do not convert? Why cold call rates are down and prospects don't open our emails? Why our responses of robocalls and implanting pixels to track user interaction, mostly without permission, is backfiring spectacularly? Well, that's what we intend to find out here in the Buyerside Chat podcast. There are scores of podcasts about selling, but most miss the shift that has come upon the buying-selling process. The initiative has since moved from the supply to the demand side. The Buyerside Chat, your podcast of record for B2B buying, talks to actual buyers, persons, not personas, in the quest to understand the real buyer's journey, their trials and tribulations, challenges and outcomes they're striving for. Welcome to the Buyerside Chat. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Today, we have with us Nico Back, founder Digital Procurement Now and ex-Digital Procurement Senior Director of Procter & Gamble.
But I think the last 15 to 20 years, I think companies have invested a lot in procurement expertise for indirect procurement, which I think is where actually procurement skills are even more valuable, because I think when you look at the offerings from indirect suppliers, I think often they sell you different things, right? So, I mean, if I'm looking for a piece of software, one company will sell me a different piece of software than another company. And while there's ways to compare it, obviously there's a lot more at stake. And I think the team that works on assessing these different options becomes broader and broader, right? I mean, IT, but also info security, kind of the business, what are the results that we want to achieve, how to achieve those results with this new software, this new technology. So I think the teams that are involved in assessing these options are often more diverse. And I think it also moves the role of procurement from being a buyer to more of a business manager.
Meet Nico Back, founder Digital Procurement Now. He's an expert in digital procurement transformation with over 20 years of experience in purchasing, developing sourcing teams around the world, and supply network design. Nico comes from a strong analytical background and hands-on experience in acquisitions, site divestitures, and outsourcing. In his 19-plus years at Procter & Gamble, Nico transformed Procter & Gamble's indirect spend management processes by bringing it into the innovative Coupa cloud platform. All its $20 billion in annual indirect spend across 71 countries, 55,000 users, and 62,000 suppliers has transitioned into this platform. Spend under management has increased to more than 90%, PR to PO cycle time reduced by two-thirds, and e-invoicing increased from 20% to over 85%. Nico elevated contract manufacturing to be strategic in P&G's overall supply network design across Asia, Europe, Middle East, and Africa, and grew contract manufacturing volumes from 5% to over 10% of total volume sold in Europe. Now, onto this insightful conversation with Nico Back. Nico, welcome to the Buyerside Chat. I'm really excited that I could finally nail you down in Geneva and we are having this chat. Thank you for joining me right in the morning. So I'll start off with the elephant in the room. The sales organizations have a view of the buyer, which to my mind is from 20 years back. And the buyer in the meantime has moved very, very far. Procurement has moved very, very far. And it's a completely new buyer that one is talking to. What do you see from your vantage point?
Yeah, no, thank you very much. I mean, happy to be on the show. I've been a buyer for more than 20 years. So I can really see that things have changed a lot. I think in the beginning, it was always hard to get information. It was always hard to find out, okay, what are alternative suppliers to these suppliers that I'm working with? And I think there's a lot has changed in terms of the amount of information that's available and expertise that you can tap in to really make informed decisions as a buyer, right? So markets are opening up, information frees more freely. And that's really a great environment for buyers to take advantage of. And many buyers do. Buyers are more tech savvy than they used to be before. So they know how to get information on suppliers. They know how to get information on risk profiles of suppliers, or financial health of suppliers, or environmental performance of suppliers, or social performance on suppliers, etc. So there's a lot of data available these days. And I think more and more buyers are using that to ensure that they buy the right things from the right suppliers. And also take all these other factors into account, besides the pricing and the payment terms and all the usual stuff. I think a lot of other things are important. And I think especially when you look at the industry where I'm coming from, I work with Procter & Gamble for more than 20 years. It's all about brands, it's all about branding, it's all about the story. And I think doing good as a brand and as a business is good for business, right? So there's a lot of interest in ensuring that we work with the right suppliers, that we have minority programs going on, that we support female-owned businesses, et cetera, et cetera. And to do that properly, obviously, the internet is a magical kind of vault of information to really know everything you want to know about your suppliers.
When I talk to salespeople, they are talking in terms of, we need to get into the discussion early. We need to have a clear differentiator. We need to be trustworthy. We need to build trust. So they're still talking about these things, while what I hear you say are far more diverse considerations that are there. When you are deciding to buy something, when does the discussion actually start? Because before you even look at a vendor, there is a lot that is happening inside the organization, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. And I think it all depends on what it is that you're buying, right? I mean, procurement basically takes care of a lot of different spend areas across the spectrum. So obviously all the supply chain spend, chemicals, packaging, contract manufacturing. But I think the last 15 to 20 years, I think companies have invested a lot in procurement expertise for indirect procurement, which I think is where actually procurement skills are even more more valuable, because I think when you look at the offerings from indirect suppliers, I think often they sell you different things, right? So, yeah. I mean, if I'm looking for a piece of software, one company will sell me a different piece of software than another company. And while there's ways to compare it, obviously there's a lot more at stake. And I think the team that works on assessing these different options becomes broader and broader, right? I mean, IT, but also info security, kind of the business, what are the results that we want to achieve, how to achieve those results with this new software, this new technology. So I think the teams that are involved in assessing these options are often more diverse. And I think it also moves the role of procurement from being a buyer to more of a business manager, right? So, understanding and focusing on what's the business outcome that we want to achieve, and then really start from there. For example, software procurement is really, I've done that for a couple of years for P&G as well. And that's one of the most exciting things, because I think that the impact you can have on the business is very, very significant, right? Really right. Driving, helping to drive the digital transformation of your business, and ensuring that the Amazons of this world are kind of your partners, or you basically grow with them, versus getting behind in the areas of e-commerce and connections directly with consumers and the data we have on consumers, etc., etc. So there's a lot of things at play there, but obviously companies need to be technology savvy and really be on the front end of leveraging technology to grow and help help the business forward. So
I would say broadly there will be two types of purchase processes. One is commodities that you have already bought. It's a pretty simple product, maybe a chemical which multiple plants can actually manufacture. Prices are pretty much known. Delivery logistics is handled. So it's more like buying the same thing over and over again because you are producing the same products over and over again and so on. The other is something which you're buying for the first time. So for example, you are going to bring in a new logistics software or you are going to buy, you're starting a new product which has a completely new raw material to be sourced, which possibly is not available locally, which may be brought from a different continent or a different country and so on. These two processes are different, right? Yeah. I'd like you to break it down for me, starting with the second one where you are buying something new. How does that actually happen inside the organization?
Yeah. No, I mean, we do a lot of co-development with suppliers on the packaging side, on the chemical side. And obviously those relationships start when we are kind of figuring out what it is that we want the chemical to do or the packaging to do, right? So that's really very early in the process. And our research and development team is working with suppliers, with the procurement organization involved from the start to ensure that, you know, we do this with the right suppliers. And we already talk to commercials kind of as we started development work, because I think, if we do a lot of work and then later on conclude that the commercials will never work, then I think everybody is wasting a lot of time. So those things are all have to be part of that process, which is really early on. It's exciting, right? Because you're working on, you know, bringing new stuff to the world, right? Consumer benefits that are not there today, through development of new packaging, new chemicals, with often a very, you know, often just one supplier, or maybe sometimes two, but often it's just one supplier, or it's a collaboration between two, three suppliers. That's also possible. But really, when you look at those processes, it's very early on. But when you look at IT, it's again, you know, that's something that, you know, probably we've not bought before, but there's a lot of exciting IT solutions out there that can really help digitize our sales processes or our data structure or develop connections directly with consumers. So I think those are also very exciting, procurement opportunities. And I think it goes far beyond price, right? Because it's more around, okay, what do we need to make the business successful? And I think when it comes to picking software, I think the key is not the price. The key is really the innovation and picking the innovation leader in that space, right? I think that's probably one of the most important criteria as you look at software selection, for example, or, you know, and user experience, so it gets adopted. So, yeah, I mean, every time you look at what's important in what it is that you're buying, and I think when you're clear about what's important, then I think you're clear about what suppliers to invite. And I think the type of suppliers that you work with varies a lot, and also the different types of stuff that you're buying varies a lot. And instead of going for like a standard kind of approach and say, well, buying is all about this. No, luckily it's not that simple. And it really takes time and effort to get into the details of what it is that you're buying and then derive your strategy from there.
Sure. So I'll request you to go into a little more depth in terms of what kind of criteria, and you can pick up any example. I'm okay. I mean, you don't have to tell me anything specific, but software or chemicals or whatever. What are the criteria that makes you choose the final vendor?
Yeah. Well, I take an example from my last job at P&G, which was digital transformation for sourcing, this procurement, ordering and payments, right? So you look at the whole spectrum, you say, well, we want to digitize the end-to-end process with suppliers, right? From selecting suppliers, doing e-bidding, to getting the orders to the suppliers, catalogs, and then also the invoice receipt, invoice processing, approval. So the whole end-to-end process, right? Because the suppliers today have so many different touch points, you know, for purchase orders is this touch point, and for planning, forecast, you get it by email, and then the invoice you also email or you send by post. So it's kind of all over the place, right?
Correct.
And we said, no, we want to streamline that for the suppliers. So we want a source to pay end-to-end digital process. Well, okay, well, that's a very broad process, right? So we looked into the market, and basically there were only two players that were really covering end-to-end, right? From sourcing to ordering to payments. So, you know, those were the two players, you know, both significant players, sizable players. Well, then you go and, you know, you go into get some expertise from outside. So, I mean, Spend Matters has a lot of expertise in this space, for example. And, you know, you basically compare these two options. And then you say, what's really important when you compare these options, right? Then we said, well, we want something that is free for our suppliers, because we want to create a network effect. We don't want our suppliers to pay money to a third party to be able to send us invoices, for example, sure. Right? We said free for suppliers, so we get the network effect, we get the adoption from suppliers, so our suppliers will actually like it, right? Our users, we want our users to like it as well, right? So instead of having a complex program where you need many hours of training, we said, no, we want to have a software that has the best user experience. Okay, so basically those were the two key criteria. And maybe a third one was, who's the innovation leader, right? So who developed their software at a pace like superior to the other? And that's what we then decided, right? So we put those three criteria, and we compare these two software packages, because there were only two that were able to offer end-to-end solution. And then based on that criteria, we picked one of them and decided to run with it. I mean, then you look at the cost of the software is actually very minor to all the other factors that are at play, right? Compared to the value that you can achieve. So, yeah.
I understand the previous parts, but when it comes to evaluating the software, are you trying to do it in-house, or are you bringing in some experts who know the software also?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was funny because at the time I didn't really have a lot of experience buying software, right? So the first thing I said, can we do a pilot? Can we just try the software out without kind of, you know, hooking it up, etc.? And the company explained to me that would be like trying Facebook without content, right? So, I mean, yes, you can try it, but if there's no content there, there's nothing to look at. So they said, well, it's not very useful to try our software out if you don't have the catalogs there and you don't have your suppliers there, etc. So they said, well, instead of doing a pilot, what we suggest is you talk to some of our clients and understand what results they have achieved with the software. Okay. And that to me is, you know, is a have to do, right? You have to do that, because some companies have been investing for years, you know, they're like miles ahead of you. They figured it all out. They know the strength and the weaknesses of these two different software vendors. And talking to a couple of customers, it became very, very clear which one was the best one for us, right? And I'm not saying that's the best for everyone, but based on our criteria, which were user experience, free for suppliers, innovation leader, you know, we basically, it became a very easy choice. But there's a lot of homework that goes with that, right? Because it's not something that you can do in a 4 or 6 weeks period, right? I mean, you get yourself well informed, you make a short list, but then you go into depth. And I think also an RFI or an RFQ is probably not very useful, because it's very formal. It's like a hands-off, like as if the two solutions are the same and the solutions are not at all the same, right? So you can't really, it's not an apple to apple comparison. And I think a formal RFI, RFQ process is not very useful. I think it's just a matter of understanding what results you can deliver, and then go for the best software out there. Because, I mean, I think paying a bit more for the best software, I think, is a much better choice than trying to pick the cheapest one and then get stuck in implementation and people not liking it and all the rest of it. So, yeah.
It's time for a short break. Nico was explaining the complex buying process, and I asked him what happens if there are more than two vendors, the scenario Nico was elaborating on. How does that scenario play itself out with multiple vendors? We will continue after the break. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Right before the break, I asked Nico, how does a scenario with multiple vendors play out within the buying process? Listen in. So in this case, there were only two known products, but if imagine there were more vendors, how do you actually identify those vendors and how do you start the process? So will those be through RFI and RFQ?
No, not even, right? Because the thing is, when you look at the industry, there are so many vendors out there and they all have a different like niche or they do a slightly different part of the process. So I think you should start really with Gartner or with Forrester or with Spend Matters. Mm-hmm. Understand the quadrants or like what solutions are you considering? And you basically look at the leaders,
right?
The three, four leaders in that field. And then you kind of understand a little bit on how this has developed over the last couple of years. So sometimes a company is not yet a leader, but they're actually developing four times faster than the leader in the field. And I think that's might be a better choice as a vendor than picking one of the kind of old guard suppliers that has been a leader for a long time, but now is losing track because they can't innovate at the same pace as some of these smaller companies, right?
Right.
I would not go for an RFI to figure that out because all these assessments have been done. And I think it's very easy to get those. And that should be your starting point. And I think when you then have figured out these are the three, four suppliers that I've shortlisted, go and talk to clients of them.
How effective are sites like G2 and Capterra and this kind of, especially for, because these are for software, do these play some role?
Well, I've tried to use that, right? Because one of the things we try to do is a Net Promoter Score, right? NPS, on software solutions. There's no reliable data. There is no reliable data. So, I mean, I compare solutions and I'm Googling an NPS score for, and you get like, you know, a lot of sponsored sites. And I think a lot of vendors don't really want you to know what their NPS score is. And I think a lot of vendors also are not so keen to have you talk to their customers. Okay. Yeah. So those are obviously not the best signs. And then, you know, when that happens, then keep looking, right? I mean,
right.
Software is something that you probably don't have to buy.
Sure.
So maybe it's not the right time to buy it yet, right? You have to wait till the market is more mature.
Sure. So now let's go back to the commodity question. If it is a commoditized product and you are buying it regularly and you already have some suppliers, how does one vendor get into that, break into that, and how do they differentiate themselves so that you say, oh, I think I'm going to try this new guy?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I give you, I think this is the other side of the spectrum.
Yes.
So I think it's so cool about procurement that you have very different sides of the spectrum. So I think in this case, when you have a very established market and you're buying the same thing for, you know, 5, 10, 20 years, even, right? Like look at surfactants or bottles or labels, like the basic things that we buy that go into our product. I think what's important is that, you know, you have your established set of vendors, right? So they're the ones that are currently delivering, that you keep it open for other vendors to come in, right? Because it doesn't matter what you buy, there is always developments in the industry. Either it's feedstocks or it's new technology or it's digital printing or it's like all these things that are becoming available. And your current suppliers might not be the leaders in those areas, right? So you might be happily buying the same thing for good prices from the same suppliers, but you might be missing out on great opportunities because new vendors are coming up with new ideas and new technology to actually manufacture those goods at higher quality, better lead times. I mean, what have you, or better prices, right? So I think that's it's very important to keep your eyes open. You just mentioned at the beginning there's not many books written about procurement. Well, I have a book here that I just started reading, which is from a friend of mine, from Denmark, and he's the digital procurement leader for Maersk. Jacob Larsen. And I was already in touch with him when I was working for P&G, and we've been in a few forums, etc. Maersk, the container company, does a lot of e-auctions, right? Okay. So they basically say, well, to keep my market competitive and ensure new suppliers get a chance, I basically do a lot of e-auctions. So I open up these opportunities, not just to my current vendors, but also to new vendors. So I want to stay in touch with the market. And this guide, I mean, this book that's written is all around e-auctions and how to get to a fair process between the incumbent suppliers and new suppliers.
Right.
And I think that's a very powerful, you know, way to find new suppliers and allocate businesses to new suppliers so they can prove themselves. So yeah, I think e-bidding and getting them new suppliers involved in that process and making sure they understand what it is that you're looking for, you create a level playing field between the different vendors, etc. I think that's really a good way to basically run your procurement process for the stuff that you buy year in, year out.
Right.
And I mean, I have an example in P&G. I mean, the materials that we make our diapers from, I mean, Pampers, is a material that we've been buying for a long time. You know, we look at those type of tools to really optimize the allocation of non-wovens across, I don't know, 20 plus suppliers and 20 plus diaper sites that we have around the globe, right? So you get into very complex comparisons between supplier options, etc. And you need like mathematical tools to optimize and get to ideal scenarios, which we, you know, in P&G we're quite advanced at for large spend items like non-wovens going into diapers. So I think also there, I think technology can play a very key role to actually open up the business to new suppliers and to make the business known to them, and not just about specifications, but also what it takes to be successful and be part of the innovation pipeline or the developments that we want to have in this field. So yeah, I mean, that's the other side of the spectrum, and I think there, you know, suppliers can. I mean, when I put myself in the shoes of suppliers, I mean, a lot of suppliers are not big fans of auctions, but those are always the suppliers that have the business at the moment. The suppliers that are fan of auctions are the people that are looking to come into the business, have been trying for years, have not been successful because they weren't really sure what to do to get the business. And, you know, those suppliers will be really helped with such a transparent allocation process like an auction or an e-bidding process.
So tell me how technology has impacted and actually assisted in the change that has come in the role of a procurement professional. And also do talk about the changes that has happened.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, then, I mean, I go back 20 years, right? I go back to the year 2000, which is I was a junior buyer for P&G and was given a big desk and a big spend. Very excited about it, straight out of kind of university. You know, then the auctions got invented, right? So free market was launched and free market presented to P&G around, you know, what they could do with auctions. And that was the first piece of technology that came into play, saying, well, we should not negotiate stuff. We should actually auction all of it. That was a big hype. That hype never really materialized because the amount of stuff that got allocated via e-auction is still incredibly low. Yeah. But that's really where it all started, right? So e-bidding, e-sourcing, auctions. That, I think, was it's exciting, but obviously to do it right. And I've been in the e-auction back in 2004 for the first time. We bought batteries for our spin brush business. And that was very exciting because every time a supplier was underbidding, it was like another $300,000 savings. So every ping was $300. That was very exciting. And we got a lot of people excited in the room. And we had probably 10, 15 suppliers bidding for the business. A lot of them Chinese based, and they go very aggressive on price, which was the thing we really cared about when it came to these batteries, because the quality difference between the batteries wasn't that that high for the application. So so that's really where it started, and I think since then the excitement about auctions, etc., has been reduced, because I think people don't really, I think a lot of them don't know enough about it to really take advantage of auctions. And I think that's what Jacob is looking to change in his last book. But obviously then that became spend analytics, right? Big data, understanding kind of what it is that your company is spending money on. And I think a lot of companies realize that they don't really have a high level of accuracy on their taxonomy in terms of how much you spend on IT and how much you spend on marketing and media and insurances and pensions, you know, car fleet, all the rest of it, right? So very important to have a good kind of basis, good foundation, and that you have your spend correctly classified. So then the buyers understand, okay, well, I need to go after this and those. And obviously you start with the big spends and the ones that you understand the best. So spend analytics became quite of a hot thing. And what's happening now is really the small data from inside the procurement, inside the company, is combined with big data, right? So for example, you know, EcoVadis sustainability scores, or, you know, kind of financial health from Dun & Bradstreet. And so then you look at, okay, well, how much of my business do I have with suppliers that have a credit rating below this level, right? And I mean, obviously with COVID, I think, you know, the fallout from COVID will still come, and suppliers will, some certain suppliers will struggle. You know, one of the worst things that you can have to do as a procurement manager is managing bankruptcies of your suppliers, right? Yeah. In 2008, I had a whole handful of bankruptcies to manage, and that was very, very painful. And I think knowing the financial health of your supply base is, should be a given, right? And I think many procurement departments don't have that as a given, right? And then, and there it's all about, you know, combining your spend data with, you know, the DNB data on the financial health of these companies. And then you can see exactly where, you know, what suppliers are critical and also a bit shaky from a financial health point of view, right? So you can do a lot with data, and a lot more with data than I think what's probably public, what's currently done. And then obviously you have the whole automation, right? Mm-hmm. So order management, catalogs, e-invoicing. I mean, there's a lot of money spent with BPO service providers, mostly in India. I mean, I went to Bangalore, your home city, or your, the city where you are now. And a lot of that work actually is work that that I think should not be done. It should be automated. You know, suppliers don't like these manual processes of you know, posting invoices and paying them. They like digital processes. We like digital processes because obviously there's costs involved with everything that's manual, and also, you know, mistakes get done with everything that's manual. Sure. So that's also a big area, right, in the procure to pay area, and digital opportunities in that that space. So I mean, that's maybe at the high level where I see you know, things changing quite rapidly across sourcing, e-bidding, you know, supplier data, cloud computing, right? So, I mean, these platforms, these procure-to-pay platforms are all cloud-based. All the procurement technology is cloud-based or should be cloud-based. Big data, and then you go into machine learning, right? I mean, then you have a good foundation of data and you, you have a good way to classify your spend. You can start developing robots to go into the market. And that was one of the fun things I did at P&G. You know, programming an RPA robot to go out and do an inquiry with suppliers, and suppliers didn't know if it was a buyer that created the request for quotation or if it was a robot. And obviously it's still kind of early days, but these robots get trained, you know, every time they, you know, they kind of, you watch them over, and you know, we do a lot of e-bids for stuff that, you know, we have like as one-offs. And in some cases, actually, it's the robots deciding which suppliers should be involved. based on category list and pre-qualified suppliers for certain jobs, etc. Right? The future of procurement is digital. And, you know, maybe a little, my business is called Digital Procurement Now. I'm based in Geneva. And if you need any help on your digital procurement journey, feel free to reach out at dpnow.ch. And I would be happy to help you and get a strategy together that sets your procurement organization apart and really help you create a competitive edge with how you do procurement, because I think that's what procurement is all about, or should be all about, right?
Great. The Buyer Site Chat is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink enables high-quality interactions between buyers and sellers through presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create personalized sales presentations and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversation. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 650-847-5884. That is 650-847-5884. Nico, that was great chatting with you. I think it was a great wrap-up. Thank you very much. I would look forward to continuing to chat with you.
Thank you very much, Sakar. Very nice.
Coming up in the next episode.
At that time, it was single vendor kind of a solution, or maybe IT infrastructure, you can say hardware, software, everything was being bought from a single source. So if you buy a mainframe, you are getting everything from that. So it was not buying from multiple sources. You buy a hardware, you get operating system. So you get operating system, you also get database system, you get maintenance tools. So everything in one basket. Buying was so simple. So if you buy once, then rest is the application part was all created by custom built solutions. So that was the scenario. As we moved on towards the new century and Y2K, and after that, most of the people started going into the ERP systems, and it was not a single vendor solution. Different component starts becoming available from different sources. So you can buy hardware from somewhere, you can buy database from somewhere, you can have operating system from somewhere else, application from somewhere else. Also, the business application, it is not one application which will be able to solve all the problems. So you have different kind of application. You have ERP, then you have CRM, you have supply chain. So variety and all these procurements, they started becoming very critical to the business.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations with Ved Prakash Srivastava, Consultant IoT Business Unit Tata Communications, Slav Vasilevsky, Head of Procurement IT and Digital and Sourcing Strategy Expert, and Philip Eidson, Founder of Art of Procurement, and many others, unraveling in depth how the real buyers buy. Stay tuned. Thank you for being with us today on the Buyer Side Chat. This is the podcast of record for the buyer side journey. And those who know, that's the journey that matters. We hope this conversation helped you with insights that you can go and apply right now to your own value transaction process. See you in the next episode of the Buyer Side Journey.